Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th. Hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady. Live only on Netflix.
You are listening to Claret and Blue, an Aston Villa podcast brought to you by Birmingham Live.
Hello, welcome back to the Claret and Blue podcast. My name is Dan Rowlandson and we've got something slightly different for you today. I'm joined by Danny from Bedford Lions. I'll introduce you properly in a second. First of all, how are you?
I'm very good, thank you. Thanks for having me on.
So as we're recording this, it's Thursday night, so Villa haven't kicked off their season yet. But by the time everyone's watching this, I think it'll be Monday morning, so we'll have just played our first game on the Saturday. Do you think we won our first game? Are you confident?
Actually, no.
Bloody hell.
I remember Tommy even giving a penalty away in the first minute, and I hadn't even taken my eyes off my Balti pie at that point. I didn't even know what had happened, and then we ended up losing. They just seemed to be a bogey team for us, but nah, hopefully we would have won. I mean, they've not had a lot of luck, have they, in the transfer window. They've lost quite a few players. We should do. We've had a solid pre-season, haven't we?
Yeah, I think we won 3-0. So let's just see how silly we look on Monday morning when this goes out.
All right, 2-1.
We're going to have a bit of a scattergun to this podcast, a scattergun approach, I think. We've got loads of topics to cover. When we discussed you coming on the podcast, you said you got your finger in a lot of pies, which is a terrible phrase, really, but you are involved in lots of things. One of those things that you're going to help us with later down the line is that I'm going to say this now on air for the first time. We are going to be running the half marathon in Birmingham in May 2023. Now, I am nowhere near in a fit enough shape to do this. I've seen lots of talk about 12-week plans. I need a 12-week plan before I start my 12-week plan, let me tell you. I've got weight to lose, but I've got an end goal. It's something to work towards. It's a date to go for. I've said it now, so I've got to do it. I've got to slim down. I've got to get fit. Ash is doing it with me, and John and Pat, and we'll have plenty of chat on the marathon at the end of this podcast. There is a link to donate to us. We're doing it for Acorns and the Villa Foundation. So if you want to support us, we've set a goal of £1,874, a number that's obviously synonymous with Villa. Whether we can get that, I'm not quite sure. But if you want to go and donate the price of a half-time Bovril or a match programme, that'd be great. Thank you very much. Like we said, fingers in lots of pies. Villa Bellas. Yep. Let's start with that first, the official Villa Women's Network. First of all, before you share your involvement with that, tell us the importance of why these groups even need to exist in the first place.
Well, you've probably heard about Fans for Diversity, which is like a collective group of a few supporters networks. And it's because football needs to be a safe and inviting place for everybody. And it's not just in the stands, it's in the pubs, it's in the streets, it's walking to the ground and just in life in general. Because football is our national sport. Women, we make up 50% of the population. And although, you know, the women's Euros was very successful, men's football is still the biggest sport in the country. It's our biggest export to the rest of the world, arguably. It's such a massive cultural impact on British culture in general. And women can't be excluded from that. We make up half the population. And very much we end up inheriting the same football team as our dads and our granddads and whatnot. And we're part of the football family as well. So there's a couple of things that Villa Bellas are quite interested in doing. And it's not just raising our profile and going to men's games more acceptable and easy to do. But we do also want to help people sort of get interested into even the women's games. That's really important to us as well. So we were officially launched at the last game of the WSL, which we played at home at Villa Park against Birmingham City. We don't need to go over the result, to be honest, but but that's when we officially launched and partnered with Her Game 2, and they're a massive movement. They've got a huge social media presence, particularly during the Women's Euros. And again, it's just about visibility and having that safe space everywhere in every aspect of football culture. It's not just in the stands itself.
You mentioned there about, you know, you inherit your football club from your dad or your granddad, and it should be that we get to a place where daughters want to go to football because their mums used to go. It's a female thing as well. Do you think we'll get to a place, obviously I'm kind of jumping ahead here, that further down the line there is more acceptance and more kind of, it isn't just a men's thing?
Hopefully. These things take time and it'll be quite slow. And people will say, well, women do go to the football, but when you look at the percentage of the crowd, it's still quite small. And you'll always hear, I always went for my dad. And it's like, that's really lovely. I mean, because dads are our allies. They're the first people that are opening the gates for girls and women to go to games and feel protected because they're with male family members. But it's not something really that women do. And there's a small pocket of women that I see regularly, home and away, who've been going for years, but it's a very small number in comparison, obviously, to fellas.
Do you feel like when you do go with friends who are maybe, you know, other girls as well, you do have this kind of mentality of, we've got to stick together here?
Definitely. So most of the time when I go to the football, I'm with my people from my supporters club. I'm in a Lions club as well. And obviously that's, you feel protected because you're in a sort of a big gang, so to speak. When I've been able to get a ticket on general sale for my best mate down here, and we go together, do feel a bit more of a target for catcalling and having to justify ourselves in conversations. Why do we like football? Like, we have to justify and validate why we've had the audacity to turn up to the football. And it's quite frustrating. It's something that I deal with also even on social media, where it's probably a lot worse because the nature of social media and a lot of people having anonymous accounts.
I mean, I was about to say then, like, going back a few years, like, as if I'm like a, you know, middle-aged bloke, I'm 27, but even going back a few years, you know, you almost have that feeling of like, you know, what do women know about football? What, you know, why is she ringing into this radio station? What, you know, what does she know? Does that kind of mentality still exist, or have we already gone past that?
Oh, we're not past it, not by a far shot. And it's, even the women's Euros will show you that from stupid sexist memes that have been going around with like irons and all sorts, and it's just a bit convoluted and a bit lowbrow, and it's like, come on, it's at that point where, you know, it's just not banter, it's just archaic, and it's just unfunny. It's not like I'm offended, like, not funny, I'm just like, it's unfunny, it's childish, and it's just pathetic.
I mean, if my job didn't involve social media, I wouldn't be on it, because it doesn't bring any value to my life. So, you know, what is the point? At Villa Park, though, specifically, I know you go to lots of away games, and we'll tie in your Bedford Lions finger in your pie later as well.
Yeah.
How welcoming does it feel at Villa Park, or unwelcoming? What's it like actually in the stadium on match days?
I love it. And obviously I would say that because I'm a season ticket holder and I've been going for a long time. And if I cast my memory back to when I first started going to the football, when you don't know people, it can be quite intimidating. Again, it comes back to women feeling like they can go. I wouldn't have gone by myself to Villa Park. I went with my other half, and he's a, you know, a great big strapping soldier. So I feel quite
protected. I've met him once, he's a big guy.
But I wouldn't have gone by myself. And then when we did meet the other people that we went on to form the Bedford Lions, now going is, it's just nice seeing familiar faces before or after the game. And then when I go to the stands, I'm in the cheap seats in the lower north, and I absolutely love it. And I wouldn't swap it for anything. Well, I might have to next season when they knock it down. the conversation I have with the people around me, the last couple of seasons, we get to the end of the season, we're like, are we renewing again? We're renewing. Are we staying here? And we're all having that discussion, like, because none of us have sort of like gone off to Trinity or the Hull. We like where we are. We're sort of in between the goal and the corner flag, under the players' lounge, and so it means that when we score in the north end, it's like they come and celebrate right in front of us, and it's yeah, It's just the best.
We'll talk about away trips in a second. I kind of feel like we should have mentioned the Bedford thing right at the very start, really, because that is, brings a lot of context to this kind of stuff as well. You live far away and you come to Villa every home game, like you said, with a season ticket, loads of away games as well, which is probably easier for you in where you're based. I mean, Villa Park is the away day, isn't it, basically? If you're travelling all that way, you want it to be a nice experience. Like, forget all the football side of things for now, because obviously going to any game, if you lose, whatever, if I was going back 5 minutes on the way home, I'd be annoyed about it, never mind an hour and 45. But once you get there, you want to enjoy your experience, don't you? You don't want to be the subject of catcalling or some bloke saying, you know, sit down, you don't know what you're talking about. I mean, that can happen to anybody, but obviously we're talking about women here, and you've got a bit of a target on your back.
Yeah, and you know, at Villa Park, I do feel protected. Generally, it's just, we're very lucky. We've got a beautiful ground. We're all very proud of it, and I think we all feel very connected to it. You can't help but feel anything but pride when you're walking up to it and you're seeing the hull and all that beautiful brickwork. And it's just like, Villa Park's ours, and I do feel quite at home. Well, I do. I feel at home, even though it's quite far to travel. And the feeling around there is just amazing before the match. I think at the moment, though, like most people would probably say, there's a lack of sort of like hospitality options for your regular season ticket goer. So I'm really looking forward actually to the plans that have recently been released with the fan park and whatnot. So we definitely need we deserve a world-class venue.
Yeah, totally agree. The flip side of that then, away trips, like we said, the Bedford Lions going to all these different away games as well. I mean, that's a different experience for anybody. I mean, I don't get to as many away games now as I used to before I started working here. And even then, it was only maybe three or four a season, maybe five, depending on time and whatever else. But now I usually work on an away game and then go to the home games. So, you know, away is more hostile, you tend to think of, more drinking. Is that any different? Obviously, the Villa fans will stick together at an away game, but then you've got 30,000 home fans to contend with. How is that as a woman?
So going away with the Villa and being part of the Villa, you are part of a family, and so long as you're with everyone else, you're not going to get any trouble whatsoever. Sometimes it's the away fans, the home fans rather, when we're going away, that can end up giving us stick. They give stick to anybody in Claret and Blue, to be honest, but when it comes my way, then there's always obviously like an undertone to it, whether it's sexist or you have to get personal about my appearance or something like that, and it's just a bit unnecessary. I've got a kind of personality where I feel like I can take care of myself, but for someone that's a bit more timid and really loves the Villa, it could be really off-putting for him to go. The first thing that I would recommend to anybody who's going away is find friends that go to football, make allies, find people that you've got that are part of your pack, so you know which pubs you're going to, who you're going with, how you're traveling there on the train, and that'd avoid any of the trouble. Having said that, you know, the Bedford Lions, we're lovers, not fighters, and there's very little trouble when we do go away. There is obviously a drinking culture, but it always seems really good-natured. And I think about some of the away days last season, like Burnley, when everyone's at the cricket club drinking in the sun and there's a game of cricket going on. And I just think, and I look around me at the same old faces, and everyone's just having a nice time, you know. Just sometimes the football gets in the way. In the way of a good away day.
Without kind of bringing the mood down, but I feel like I have to ask the question. What's like kind of the worst experience you can think of going to a football game, where there's a chant or a moment or somebody said something that you didn't like, or is there anything that springs to mind?
I can't say I've had anything that's worse that's been like traumatic, other than sort of regular sort of low-level catcalling and whatnot as a woman. And what I will say is the worst thing that I heard in stands was actually homophobic chanting. That made me feel the most uncomfortable. Those people were obviously, you know, people around them didn't stand for it and sort of said things to them. But I think sadly sometimes at football, and part of the intimidating culture, and I don't mean to be, sound so blatant when I say this, but I think amongst groups of some young men in particular, there's a culture of sort of like open drug taking on occasion, can't handle themselves, and that's the sad thing, and that's the intimidating bit about being away. The small pockets of that, even in the Villa end as well. As we always say, we've always got a couple of idiots. And yeah, sadly, that's just an aspect of football culture that seems to becoming more acceptable.
Tell us a little bit about Villa Bellas and the mission statement and what you hope to achieve there and your kind of role in that group as well.
Yeah, well, Villa Bellas was founded actually by Sarah Breslin. So if you go to our Twitter page, you can see that she's on there as well. She's actually season ticket holder at Villa Women. And whereas I'm more like the 2IC, so to speak, and I'm a season ticket holder at men's games as well. So we cover both of the teams between us. And essentially, the point of the Villa Bellas is because football is for everyone. Everyone should feel safe, welcome in the stands or on the pitch, whether you know, a young girl wants to get into football and playing football, and essentially just supporting inclusion and diversity and just aim to raise the voice of women in general, and just to celebrate ourselves and champion ourselves as well. And like I said earlier, it's just letting us just be ourselves at the football, not having to validate ourselves why we're there and having to prove ourselves by, you know, what's the offside rule or who was the starting 11 when we played Chelsea in 1999. Like, we don't need those tests, you know. It's just, but it's just one of those things. But in general, I think one of the main things as well, off the back particularly of the Women's Euros, is that Villa Bellas are officially partnered with both the men's teams and the women's teams, but we really need to sort of like encourage people to go and see Villa Women. Villa Women have got one of the lowest turnouts in the WSL. Wow. And it might be because they play the home games in Warsaw perhaps, or there could be other reasons, but maybe one of them is because people just don't know about the games or are worried that they're not going to enjoy it. It might be they're worried that the quality, I'll put that in inverted commas, is going to be poor. But then, of course, we've watched the Women's Euros and we've seen, you know, the England team, for instance, absolutely smash it. So
yeah,
our first home game, I think, is against Man City women. I mean, they're absolutely sensational as well. So it'd be really great just for people to start getting into that habit if the, you know, Villa men are not at home, you can't get away and you want some live football, then support Villa but in a different way, and support the Villa women. Go along, and the tickets are so cheap as well.
Yeah.
So cheap. We're talking about like a cost of living crisis, and it's so expensive to get to Premier League games, we know it is, but WSL games are cheap as chips. So it's and that's definitely something that's really nice from a family perspective. A good introduction for kids really getting into football. And I guess when they start going to WSL games and they learn to enjoy being at football and supporting the players in a really safe environment, that should hopefully translate into them growing up to be adults that don't go absolutely crazy at the football with drinks and drugs and fighting and all of that. You know, we could start them off young.
It's a totally different atmosphere at the women's games, and it's obviously playing in smaller grounds. You kind of get close to them and you feel like you've got better access with them than you do the men's team, and that's exciting for kids as well.
Yeah.
Just on the back of the Women's Euro success, how much of an impact do you think that will have on, first of all, like women and young girls getting involved in football, either playing it or watching, and also from, you know, men, I guess, their attitudes towards women's football?
Oh, I think it's massive. First of all, the last point about men and enjoying it, you men are allies. So it's historically it's been your environment, and we need to feel like we're accepted in there. And it starts off with, like I said, like dads taking the daughters to the football and getting quite protective of them, but they get accepted in that group, and so on and so forth. So, yeah, there's no way to beat around the bush. Like, men, you're the gatekeepers here, and you have to be the allies and let us in, really. And it doesn't help if you've, you know, there's some men out there that have got quite archaic feelings on women being at the football, which is bonkers, because women's football used to be historically absolutely massive before it was banned by the FA. And that's where a lot of the sexism's come from, which is crazy. You know, women's matches used to pull in thousands and thousands and thousands of people. And it was really, really popular up until it got banned. But with England winning the Euros, so many people cheered into it. And so many people were really excited about it. You know, we finally brought it home. And then when we actually did it, the amount of people that told me that they got emotional as well, not just women, but blokes, because we've been waiting so long for some success of some sort. Mm. And they did. The women were absolutely superb throughout the whole of the tournament. And to have won it against a really tough opposition like Germany, it's just amazing. And there's a lot of parallels there, I guess, with it being like England, Germany at Wembley. Yeah, it's been amazing. And I know that the women's team all got together to release a statement for the education minister, generally speaking, for education in general, to make sure that football's actually on the syllabus at school for girls. So, I mean, you lads probably take it for granted, you know, when you're thinking about school and you've got PE and it's like, all right, so we've got football this session and all the lads go to the playing field and play football. It's not on our syllabus. So I went to school in Birmingham, and I went to St Thomas Aquinas, which used to be a boys' grammar school, and then he eventually let girls in. And right up to the point when I went, I was in year seven a long time ago, which was 1997, there was no girls' football. It wasn't allowed. We'd asked our PE teacher, you know, are we allowed to play it? And she said, no, the head teacher is not going to allow it. It's not happening. By the time I got to year eight, and there was enough of us that were, you know, fairly talented at football in our year group, where our PE teacher really fought for us and finally won. And we got ourselves off the very first girls' football team at St Thomas Aquinas. And we played locally and we were quite good, and we won a few, you know, local tournaments and whatnot. I also remember Birmingham City Ladies coming down scouting. And being a lot of us being invited for trials, and sadly I wasn't allowed to go to the trial. That was a family thing. And it made, you know, it's always made me think, what if, you know, my primary school, I went to St Ambrose Barlow. I was in the same class as Karen Carney. You look at what she's been doing, and it just always makes you think, you know, what could have happened?
What a shame. I remember when I was at school, the girls did netball when we did football. Is that the same?
Pretty much, yeah. And, you know, netball's a good sport. It is. But football is something that's so easily accessible, because all you need is a ball. Netball, you're going to have to find a net as well. It's not something you don't just say to the girls, oh, let's go play some netball down the park. The park's not got any nets, you know. Whereas if it's football, we just get a couple of jumpers for goalposts and you can have a kick around.
It seems crazy to me. I know Matt's daughter plays a lot of football, so obviously, you know, times have changed a little bit even since I was in school, which was 10 years ago or so, I think. I want to go on to kind of two branches with this question in terms of what people can do more in terms of, you know, helping the cause, so to speak. Start with, first of all, from the football side of things, the football clubs and the Premier League and the FA and people like that. See a lot of stuff about the free period products and the Her Game 2 and stuff like that. Do you think, we'll keep it to Villa, do you think Villa do enough or can they do more to help things?
To be honest, I find that Villa are actually pretty inclusive. For instance, free sanitary products have been available for a couple of seasons, actually. I know, like, every now and then on social media, you see someone's been to a club and they'll see the sanitary products and everyone will go, wow, that's amazing. I just want to let anyone know of their interest, but Villa have been doing it for a couple of seasons, actually. And that's helpful when it comes to, like, you know, period poverty and whatnot. Would be handy. I mean, in some companies, I know that they also put them in the men's loos because with the cost of living crisis, you know, there's single dads and whatnot, and it should be available rather than just for the girl to get. If a parent needs to get it for their kid as well, it'd be helpful because I think the thing is people, annoyingly, they're seen as a luxury, but it's a necessity, you know. The adult female population for 1 week every month has a function that they can't control. It's like, can you imagine if you, like, went to the toilets and they were like, well, you're going to have to pay for your loo roll. You'd be like, hang on, but we expect loo roll. It's like, well, why do we not expect sanitary products as well? Because that's an involuntary function that does require, obviously, some maintenance so that we can go along with our lives without, you know, the disruption and trauma that could bring. So it's good that they put those products out. But I think it's deeper than that. A couple of weeks ago, myself and Sarah Breslin got invited down to the Premier League head offices down in London to be part of a listening group about women's inclusion. And it was talking about all aspects of the game. It was about not just our experiences as a fan, but there's people that were invited there that are staffing clubs, whether they are female footballers, and just the community in general. And so it was at all levels. It wasn't just about the matchday experience. It was about levelling up jobs at the football. I mean, there was one club that boasted that 50% of their staff were women. And then when they actually looked into it, the women's jobs were in, like, cleaning and catering, and they were the lowest paid jobs. It's like, when it comes to things like policy or decision making, why can't women be involved in that? It doesn't require playing the actual game of football, like a lot of people in position in football don't either. It's business. It's an industry of its own. And so that's another level of it.
And the flip side of the question, the original question I asked then, is about what more can I do, what more can we do on the podcast and social media? We're all men of you know, ages ranging from 21-ish to 21 to whatever Matt is, 40-something. I don't know. Sorry, I don't know, Matt, if you're watching.
Yeah, but your voice is going to be so, mortified.
I'm sure it's like 44, 43, something like that. Obviously, I'm not kind of just going to say, oh, we've got this podcast, what more can we do? We're going to start doing this every single week or whatever. But, you know, just maybe little things, maybe things we need to keep an eye on when we go to games. What do we need to be aware of to help be an ally?
To be inclusive would be to sort of, like, overtly show that, you know, you're non-threatening, for instance. So if a girl's, like, getting a bit of hassle from a group of lads, you know, we're not expecting you to sort of step in like a knight in shining armour, but the kind of gesture to sort of say, well, you're all right, I'll come on over here, and just those kind of things would be all right if and more helpful. Or, you know, if you're hearing stupid chants in stands, when it's like when you hear a homophobic one or a racist one, and we all turn around, we react to it. It'd be nice if people felt that they could do that rather than just going, oh, just it'd rather not say anything. I think the main thing, you know, I've got an amazing podcast and I've been a fan for a long time. And
I'll bet you say that to all the Villa podcasts.
it's it's so great to be able to be invited onto this one. I absolutely love Claret and Blue, and just getting a bit of visibility from some prominent women in the Villa community every now and then, just dabble us in, and then we look like we're just a regular supporter like anybody else. And as opposed to people that might be listening into this, they might just be thinking, oh, it's just a token episode. It would be better if it was normalised.
Yeah, I certainly wouldn't want that to, you know, be the message that people think we're just doing this for the sake of ticking a box. That wouldn't be the case at all. Somebody asked actually the other day about whether we'd do a podcast specifically for the Villa women's side, and I've not replied to it yet, but I was saying to you before we came on, I've said this to a few people that almost don't believe it to be true, that I'm a Villa fan, I'm a football fan, but I don't watch much football outside of Aston Villa men's games. Should clarify that as well, because I work in football, so when I log off at 7 o'clock or whatever, it's 8:45 as we record this now on an evening. If I log off now, I don't really want to go and sit in front of the telly with my partner and watch football, because I've been consumed by football all day, like it's a busman's holiday, isn't it? So I don't know much about the other Premier League sides, never mind the Villa women's side, for a league of football that I don't watch. So I don't want to do a podcast about the Villa women as a box-ticking exercise and clearly not know what I'm talking about, because that wouldn't be fair either. If we can find somebody to host and produce a Villa Women's podcast for Claret and Blue, which is something maybe I'll need to work out in the background, we'd happily host that here. I just don't want to do it for the sake of it. But if that's something we can add to the podcast, whether it's maybe a monthly update from the Villa Women and we get someone on to come and chat about it, then maybe that's something we can do going forward, perhaps.
I think, you know, with the growing presence of some of the amazing signings that we've got in the Villa Women team and on social media, generally speaking, I think most people that absorb this content actually wouldn't mind, to be honest. Just a bit of an update and a roundup of you know, the women, comings and goings and injuries and latest results and whatnot. But like I said earlier, the tickets are so cheap. Get yourself down there.
Obviously, we saw with the podcast that we did last week about Villa and Proud, there were people that have an umbrage to certain podcasts or certain topics. But, you know, this is free content on YouTube that you don't have to watch. If you've got 38 minutes into this video and realise this isn't for you, then that's absolutely fine. If you scroll past a Villa Women's video, or we do a roundup of, you know, September, October, November, what happened for the Villa Women this month, and that isn't for you, don't click play.
I'd love it if someone got this far through and then no, I don't like this.
I've never understood like angry reviews or negative reviews on anything, like things you can buy on Amazon or whatever. Like I don't understand it. I can't imagine like going to my computer, signing into a website, filling in all their details, then going back to the product page, writing an angry review and sending it, and then reading it back and going, oh yeah, that was all right. So when that's a kind of hate comment about gay people or women or racism, it's like that's another level of scum. I couldn't think of a better word. Let's you know, like we've been told to stick to football, we've done that for 40 minutes or so. Let's move away from football though and talk about running and half marathons.
Amazed. I'm so happy that you're going to run this half marathon.
You know about it now, so I mean that's one person putting pressure on already.
Well, that's it. I mean, you opened up and it's now like Twitter official and on Spotify and YouTube, so everyone knows you're running it now and you can't back out.
Let's talk about the Villa Running Club first of all though. That's an initiative you started in the first lockdown, I think it was. When it was popular to run 5k, Joe Wicks, you know, kind of promoting healthy living and all that kind of stuff, and there was a lot of people doing running in the first lockdown for mental health reasons, for physical health reasons, and you kind of spotted an opportunity there. So tell us a little bit about Villa Running Club and how that started.
Villa Running Club is just a casual running club where the thing that we've got in common is that we support Villa and we go running. We might not necessarily be good at running. There are some people that are like absolute whippets that are in Villa Running Club, and then you've got potatoes like me that sort of just plod along. And, you know, I run less frequently now that I'm back at work full time, because it's a time and energy thing, isn't it? But I really enjoy it, and I just do like sort of imparting a bit of my running wisdom on people. And I'm not Paula Radcliffe, I'm really not. I'm a plodder. I'm not an expert, but I do get, you know, the benefits that I get from running, more than anything with a 9-to-5 job, it's just time on my own. You know, I get my best thinking done. In terms of mental health, sometimes psyching yourself to go for that run in the first instance is difficult, but I promise that, like, once you're out there and you're doing the run, and then when it's particularly when you finish it and all your endorphins are going crazy, you feel really good about yourself. Like I said, it's that me time where you can just put the world to rights in your head while you're running as well. So it's really good just for having that audit on all your thoughts.
Yeah, I got quite into it in that first lockdown from kind of like late March to probably the September or the October of that year. And I was going maybe 3 or 4 times a week, 15, 20K a week. Felt good, probably in the fittest state I'd been since I was a teenager. And then met somebody, moved out, had a few takeaways and stopped the runs and put on the weight. Oh, it's natural, isn't it? That's
life.
These things happen as you get older. But wanted to get going again. Moved to a different area, so different routes and stuff like that. Very hilly around here, so I don't know if I fancy it. And it's winter and it's cold, and I've got loads of excuses. Trust me, I can keep bringing the excuses out. But yeah, got out of shape a little bit and thought, right, I need to kind of get back into it. And I've tried doing like 60-second sprint, 60-second walk, and trying to get my fitness back and all these kind of things. And then I ran a 5K, and my time was way slower than it used to be. And first of all, that kind of discouraged me, thinking, oh, I'm not as fit as I used to be. I'm not as good as this as I used to be. So I'm quite competitive. So the fun thing for me was that, like, if I went on Tuesday and I did it in, I mean, I was, again, different paces. If I did it in 26 minutes, 5K, I'd be like, that's a good time for me. I'm happy with that. And the next time I'm going, if I did it in 25 minutes, 50 seconds, I'd be like, oh, that's 10 seconds quicker. Like, I've won. Like, I'm better than I was. And that's like the little fun part for me. So I wanted to get back into it. And then I saw about the Birmingham Great Run, or the Great Birmingham Run, either a 10K or a half marathon. And for some reason, I said, yeah, let's do a half marathon. And here we are. And I've got to do it because I've said I'm doing it. So I set up a group chat I sent messages to Ash, John and Pat and said, do you run? And they were like, why? I said, do you fancy doing the half marathon with me for charity? And I said, well, they all said yes, thankfully. So I set up a group, WhatsApp group, and we've been chatting in there for the last couple of days. Again, when this goes out, I'll have done another couple of runs by then. So, you know, I'm feeling good. My legs are good, I hope. Yeah, so we're doing this half marathon. Like I said, there is a link to donate to us. We're doing it for Acorns and AVFC Foundation. Again, the cost of doing crisis, I appreciate it. It's difficult to donate. But again, a price of a half-time bovril or a program or a pie or something like that, a couple of quid would go a long way. We have set a target of £1,874, which I'm not quite sure we can hit, but it's obviously a nice number for Villa fans, 1874. It's the 7th of May, 2023. According to their website, it's the Midlands' biggest and best running event. You've done it before.
Yeah.
What have I let myself in for?
Oh, look, I brought a little prop as well. This is a 2022 winner's medal. I've got a bull on
there. Did it this year?
Did it earlier this year. It wasn't a particularly great time, so I had COVID earlier this year, but I was just, like I said, I'm just a potato and I'm a plodder and I'm stubborn, so I finish things. But I've done a couple of halves before, and the organisation and the setup and everything about the Great Birmingham Run was fantastic. The only thing I would say is it's the hardest half marathon course that I've ever done, and you've just like thrown yourself right in at the deep end. You've just said your new area is too hilly, but it's perfect for training because
good.
The Birmingham half has got some hills. Oh my word, absolute sickeners. It's got some really pretty parts of some of the parks that you're going through, and It's in terms of like I said, the event itself, it's brilliant.
Ash, to be fair, does a lot of running. He's out every morning, 5 a.m. A certain running club doing 5Ks, which fair play to him. Fair play, really good. I think his times are pretty decent. I think he said his personal best was something like 23 minutes, which I've never done it that quick, so that's decent. John said that he's done 10Ks, but not for a while, so he's got some experience. Ooh. And Pat said, I don't think I've ever finished a 5K. As much as he's a big, fit, athletic lad in terms of running, he's not got the same experience as the others. I said I was into it in the 2020, but that was 2 years ago now, so yeah. I've certainly lost my fitness now. I've read different things. I'm not coming in totally cold, but I'm going to ask you for some of your tips in a second. It's just certainly kind of building up slow. It's not about speed. It's about distance and endurance. So for someone like me who's never run a half marathon before, never thought I'd even run a 10K before, what are your kind of top tips or best advice for how I approach the next 9 months?
Okay, well, the first one I'm going to say is don't ever beat yourself up when you go for a run. So you mentioned before about, you know, you go for a run, you get a good time, and you go out again, you don't get that time. It's disheartening. Don't set yourself those barriers. You can't get a PB every time. So first of all, be realistic with your expectations, because different things will affect your run day to day in a week. It could be, you know, your work schedule, your sleep pattern, the food that you've had that day. Just don't beat yourself up if you're not as beating your best time, because that's impossible. You can't. You're going to have some really good days, and you're going to have your regular days, and you'll find yourself in a little bracket of where you know what actually is your average kind of running time, and that's your comfortable running time, and that's actually what you want to concentrate on. Make your distance bigger eventually. So rather than thinking about getting faster and faster and faster, think about, where am I comfortable? Can I go further? That's the difference. So the next thing that I would say is, in building your distance, is a really good sort of mental method called the lamppost theory, which is just
about... Oh my God, I do this and I didn't even know I did it. Yeah, so when I first got into running before 2020, I did a little bit, and I think the first I ever did in one go without stopping was like 2.5K or whatever. I was very unfit, and the thought of even a 5K, I was like, oh, I'll never be able to do that. 25 minutes, half an hour without stopping, I'll need to have a walk or whatever. Like, I'll never be able to do it. But when I used to first get into it, I would run, and like I said about being competitive, I would finish like a bin or whatever. And then the next time I go, I'll be like, I stopped at that bin yesterday. So if I just get to the traffic lights, I've got a bit further, and then I'll just get to the school next time or whatever it'll be. So yeah, I'll obviously do that already. So that's a good tip.
Oh, that's really good. Work. That's it, definitely. And there's a lot of training programs out there that are free and accessible. So I ran for the Villa Foundation last year. Bodymore got together a nutrition plan for us and a 12-week running plan. So that was really great that the club did that for us. So if you're running for the foundation, hopefully they'll do the same again this year. But to receive that plan from Bodymore was kind of... felt really special, really personal.
Yeah, that's cool.
Really motivated me to do that. So it's helpful to have something like that as a guide, because if you're not sure what you should be doing, what you don't want to do is injure yourself in the run up to it. So you want to, you know, build up on your fitness. So definitely research a plan. But also in the Great Birmingham Run, on the Great Run website, they've also got plans as well. I'd also say, make sure you got yourself a really good running playlist, but you need to think your running playlist through. If you've got tunes that where the tempo is all over the place, your body will naturally try and match that pace. That will obviously throw out, you know, your natural stride. Whether you use Spotify or Apple Music or whatever you use, there's actually loads of really good generic running playlists on there. So I'd recommend taking a look at some of those, because they're quite good as like that background sort of motivation and for rhythm and stride and technique. You can get yourself fitted for running shoes. So previously I've been to running shops where they'll watch your gait, you know, how your foot falls. And you mentioned that when you run slower, you're worried about injuries and, you know, your ankles and your knees, the impact of that. But by having the right trainers, that won't be a problem. It shouldn't be a problem. And the right trainers is so, so important. Getting your running shoes, this is another tip then, is it's not about what looks good. Yeah. It's what suits your feet. So, for instance, I wish that I could wear Nike because they look pretty cool. But I've got wide feet. Like, they're huge, massive things. They're horrible.
I've got Nike and I've got wide feet as well.
For instance, I slightly overpronate, which means my ankles go over a little bit, so I need support. So for me, I know that the brands for me to go to are Asics or Saucony or Adidas. I can wear those, but I can't wear Nike, which annoys me because there's some really nice looking running shoes. So you can't buy your running shoe on what you fancy looking at. It's running's not a fashion parade. More often than not, the best running shoes look absolutely honking.
I hope that this podcast has, there'll be other people that will be doing this run as well. Obviously, the Villa Running Club, I imagine there'll be some people on there that are doing the Birmingham run as well. So if people have stumbled upon this podcast maybe for the first time, hopefully this has been useful in terms of, I mean, we've covered a range of subjects, but the last 10 minutes or so about running, it's interesting to me. I feel like this podcast at this point is just a bit selfish. Like, I've just got you on a call to help me, basically, but I need help. I've got to run 13 miles and I'm just not in a fit place to do it at the moment, so any advice I can get is great. In terms of going forward in our marathon journey, to make it sound absolutely soppy, we're not going to be doing running podcasts every week for the next 9 months or anything like that, or check in every so often with Ash and John and Pat whenever they're on the podcast talking about Villa, and I'll just ask them, have you run this week? Like, are you still doing it? How's things going? And the donation link will be in every podcast from now till May next year. We won't mention it every time, but it'll always be down there. You know, and every month maybe we'll just say, oh, we're doing this thing. If you want to donate, that'd be lovely. Have I cut you off there? Have you got any more tips? Or is that your list done?
I think, to be honest, that's my list. It's all about mentality as well. So like I said, don't be hard on yourself. Be realistic, find your comfortable pace, sensible running shoes and decent playlist.
Okay, yeah, good tips there. Finally, before I let you go, and it is getting late, I apologise. So we talk about Villa, you know, the men's team and what's going on the pitch a little bit as well. As we said at the very start of this, we've already played Bournemouth. We don't know what's happened yet because it's Thursday as we record this, but the game would have finished by the time this goes out. But your thoughts on the season generally, are you excited? Are you nervous? What kind of season do you think we'll have? Take it away.
No, I'm quite excited about it. And I'm thinking, my prediction, I'm going to say this before we've played Bournemouth and before the season starts, but I think we've got a squad that could get eighth. And I would take that. I do see us going onwards and upwards now. I think, you know, Gerard's going to have, you know, he's starting the season. He's had his pre-season. He's started to have some of his signings. So there shouldn't be any excuses sort of going into Christmas and whatnot. We should be in a good position before we break for the World Cup. I only went to Walsall pre-season. I couldn't get to Wren, unfortunately, but you know, from what I've seen already from your likes of Diego Carlos, I mean, the man's a unit. He's so solid at the back, and
his quads. I wish I had his quads.
I just think as well, you know, he's a world-class player, and to have him paired up with Mings, and Mings has not got the captaincy anymore, that he can hopefully relax and doesn't have to worry about carrying the back of the team, because that's something that I would say I saw from the last couple of seasons, is people quite happily scapegoat Mings very quickly and pick up for a mistake, but not recognise the clearances that he does and the way he commands the back of the field. And, you know, the fact that it seems to me like every time Ezra Konsa gets the ball goes across to Mings. It doesn't go up the pitch. It's like a lot of pressure is always on him. So I'm hoping that by having a centre-back like Diego Carlos to partner up with him, will give him will relieve some of that pressure, and we'll see an even better Tyro Mings this season.
Would you make of the striking situation? We know now that Cameron Archer's sticking around, so it's Archer, Ings and Watkins as things stand. Yeah. I think you're clearly happy about Archer. He's the most exciting one for me because he's still a bit of an unknown. He could end up playing a lot of games. Last summer when we did our pre-season preview and we were talking about Jacob Ramsey, when he started the season, I kind of thought, if he plays 30-odd games, that means Villa haven't recruited very well because he's a youngster. If he's playing a lot of games, that can't be great. And he has this breakthrough season. I feel like we could be saying the same about Cameron Archer. If come next summer, we might be saying, Cameron Archer started 25 games and he scored 13, 14 goals. He had a breakthrough season. What a hero. So he's kind of that unknown for me that he's exciting, but I kind of want to see what his potential is.
See, I think he can do it. I was there at the cup game, Chelsea away last year, and I witnessed Cameron Archer putting a proper decent header in against Chelsea, who at that time were the champions of Europe. He literally came on, changed the game, and got us an equaliser. I mean, that was just sensational. I mean, he's so calm and collected for such a young man. It's just his footballing IQ, his positioning, he's just ahead of his years. And I think he's going to be absolutely fine. I said on Twitter several weeks ago that I don't want to see him go off on loan again. He went to the Championship. He absolutely smashed it at Preston. And that's the kind of loan that, toughen him up with physicality and whatnot. Then get him into the first team setup. Maybe he starts or maybe he comes off the bench. But last season we came unstuck when Danny Ings was injured and we only had Ollie Watkins as our striker. We had no other striker. We need to have three decent strikers in our first team because injuries are inevitable. We need that cover and that backup. And I think he's been developed enough that actually he's ready to step up into the first team. He's so exciting to watch. He really is. And I'm a big fan of Cameron Archer. And it just adds a bit more competition for the other two strikers up front. So Ollie Watkins and Danny Ings probably underperformed last season. We've seen them both miss absolute sitters. But obviously they're taking the pressure off a bit that, not all the goals have to come from them. We've got five subs now, haven't we? Let's make the most of it.
Yeah, there's got to be more goals from elsewhere. There has to be more than previous seasons. It's good as well, isn't it, that the Cameron Archer scored the winner against Bournemouth on Saturday. It was great to see him. Great to see him do that. All this is going to sound so out of date, isn't it, when we've lost the first game, Mings didn't even play. We're going to look very silly. Last thing, trophies. Is this the year we finally win some silverware, do you think?
No. I don't want to sound like a downer on it. I think we need to get a couple more signings in so that we've got that squad depth to maintain, Premier League performances so that we don't drop down the league while we're trying to do cup games midweek and whatnot, whether it's the League Cup or the FA Cup after Christmas. So we always do well in the early stages, and then as soon as we come up against top opposition, then that'll be the end of our campaign. So I think for us, we need squad depth. So I know that Gerard at this time, it might have changed by the time this comes out, but we're still looking for a number eight, which is sensible when you're thinking about the squad depth in our midfield. And for me, it's the most frustrating thing of last season is we played the ball across the back a lot of the time because we just couldn't seem to get it through the midfield. So with a ball carrier like Kamara now, and it seems like in the mid-season, in the pre-season, that Gerrard seems to, he's looking at ways that we can get like Buendia and Coutinho in the same side. I think that's just exciting. That's just exciting. So I think maybe we get to some semi-finals. Don't think we're getting any silverware this season. just one season too early.
The eighth and a cup semi-final, I think, would be successful this season. If we're pushing for European places throughout the season, then you can't ask for any more than that. Danny, thank you very much for joining me on the podcast. I've taken up far too much of your time on a Thursday evening, so thank you very much.
I told you I'm a big fan.
Yeah, that's true. I hope people watch it along. Appreciate Danny's time as well. Loads of stuff on the Villa Bella, so we'll get a link to more information to that in the comments as well. Bedford Lions, I'll put your Twitter down there as well. Villa Running Club, if you want to get involved with that, if you're a keen runner and you didn't even know that we ran on the podcast, then you learn something new every day. And if you want to support us running the great Birmingham Run, the half marathon, there's a donation link down below as well. As I say, Danny, thank you very much for your time. Thanks for everyone for watching this podcast. Well done to Villa for winning 5-0 against Bournemouth on Saturday. We'll see you all soon. Thank you very much. Thank you for listening to Claret and Blue, an Aston Villa podcast. If you enjoyed today's episode, then please do let us know. We love hearing your feedback. We'll be back soon with another episode, but until then, up the Villa.